My guest at this time is Craig Shirley. He is a prominent biographer of Ronald Reagan. His third and final installment in the Reagan biography series is Last Act, The Final Years and Emerging Legacy of Ronald Reagan. And Craig, thanks very much for being with us.
You bet, Greg.
One of the things you talk about a lot in this book, and in this book you kind of give the Reagan biography in different parts, but it's all woven into the last days of his life and the grand state funeral that played out in Washington and all the other events of that amazing week that followed his passing in June of 2004. And you talk about the different reactions that people have and how the American people have a very different reaction than the people that usually try to tell the American people what they think about something. Why was that such a dichotomy?
I think because it was the story of Reagan's life, is that the elites always criticized him, derided him, loathed him, attacked him, and the American people, by and large, learned to not only support him, but a lot of them actually grew to adore him because he was in touch with the American people, unlike any president since John Kennedy and before that Franklin Roosevelt. In fact, he often said that he got the support of the American people because he was part of the American people. He was the quintessential American. He wasn't elitist. He wasn't out of touch. He was, in many ways, his own one-man focus group.
When it came to the way the left looks at Reagan, you say there's also kind of a split there. The media, the intellectuals, the activists, the people whose names aren't actually on a ballot are still pretty much unvarnished in their dislike for Reagan. But for Democrats who are on the ballot, they figured out something was going on and found a way to mollify their criticism and even in some ways co-opt Reagan to some extent.
Boy, I'm so glad you asked that. I've been waiting for somebody to ask me that question because I thought that was so telling in the book, was the dichotomy on the left, and you're absolutely right, is that the media elite, academia, those people never understood Reagan, never understood his appeal, would actually resort to making up things about him, like columnists for the New York Times and for the Washington Post and other liberal publications would actually make up things about Ronald Reagan. But a lot of Democratic politicians, Jennifer Granholm and others, were very, very praiseworthy, and the reason is because they saw up close and personal the rise of the Reagan Democrat. And they knew that Reagan had forged a cultural and psychological bond with these important voters. They were still Democrats, but they were culturally conservative and had grown as a political phenomenon that was the most important political phenomenon in the history of American politics since the rise of the New Deal, was the rise of the Reagan Democrat. So I'm so glad you asked me that, because I've been waiting for somebody to ask me that question.
So when the Democrats, and President Obama's done this on numerous occasions, usually for transportation funding or perhaps even on immigration, a couple of issues that Reagan probably would have liked to have back, depending on how the Democrats actually move forward on the issues after he made a deal with them. But as the Democrats try to kind of use Reagan to some extent on advancing their position on an issue,
yes,
how should the American people filter that, especially those who aren't old enough to remember the Reagan years, with what Reagan really was and who he stood for and who he
was?
Well,
I would say generally anything that, Barack Obama's a politician, so anything he says you got to take with a grain of salt anyway, is that I would say go back and filter the truth. Find out the unvarnished, the real truth about Reagan on immigration and things like that. He wasn't for open borders. He wasn't for amnesty. The 86 amnesty, or the 86 immigration bill, came at a time at the height of the Cold War. He wasn't about to hand Gorbachev a giant public relations bonanza by forcibly evicting people from this country at a time where he was, speaking out to Gorbachev to free the people of his country and the Soviet-dominated countries of the Warsaw Pact and the Baltics and things like that. So, but a lot of those people who were here were political refugees. They weren't economic refugees. They were from Cuba, and they were from Nicaragua, and they were from communist terrorism in El Salvador, and that's why they'd come to the United States for political. So there's a vast difference between the type of people who were coming here in the 1980s and the people who are coming here today.
We're talking with Craig Shirley. The book is Last Act, The Final Years, An Emerging Legacy of Ronald Reagan. And Craig, you also talk in the book about how virtually every Republican candidate over the past, I think it's now eight campaigns since his last campaign, has tried to claim the mantle of Reagan. But as you write, no one's quite been able to put together the combination that he had. What are these folks missing? Or I guess more importantly, what did he have that was so special that folks responded to that others haven't been able to emulate?
Well, Greg, I would say, I mean, in a larger sense, I would cite the historians James McGregor Burns and John Patrick Diggins, both of whom, now these are liberal historians, both of whom put Reagan in the great category alongside Washington, Lincoln, and Franklin Roosevelt. Diggins said so because Reagan, like the other three, had freed or saved many, many people. You know, men like this just don't grow on trees. On the other hand, in defense of the current crop, is that, you know, as I tell audiences, is that Ronald Reagan wasn't Ronald Reagan before Ronald Reagan was Ronald Reagan. And by that, I mean, is that very few, if any, saw his greatness before he was actually great. In fact, in the long history of the American presidency, there's only one man who was thought would be a great president before he was president, and that was George Washington. Most others came in, either a wave of euphoria or a wave of skepticism or whatever, but nobody said, this person will be great before he was actually great. No sane person, anyway.
Craig, it's often been said, sometimes by Democrats, sometimes by moderate Republicans, and certainly this campaign has had its ups and downs, that Ronald Reagan today wouldn't be accepted by his own party. He's not conservative enough for some of these people. How would he feel today?
The only people who make that argument are liberals in the Republican Party or moderates in the Republican Party or establishmentarians. I don't know any conservative who says with a straight face, Ronald Reagan wouldn't be welcome today in the Republican Party. Of course he would.
And so, as you look at the emerging legacy, and you talk about so many different things in the book, obviously winning the Cold War, restoring national confidence, economic growth that really lasted through the recession in the early 90s and on through much of the Clinton years.
Isn't that interesting? The Clintons derided the decade of the 1980s as a decade of greed, and yet the very same economic underpinnings that fueled the growth of the 1990s, which came about after Gingrich took control of Congress, was not called a decade of greed. Isn't that curious?
So when all these people are flooding out into the streets in 2004 to pay their respects to President Reagan, most likely it's a combination of those things, but of all the things that he did for the country, what do you think they responded to most?
Larry Kudlow, I interviewed Larry Kudlow for my book, and he said something I thought was very interesting. He said that, people used to say, here's what Reagan meant when Reagan said something, but what Reagan meant was what Reagan meant. And so I would go to his farewell address to the American people, and the two things that he cited as being the most important, or two of the most important things that he accomplished, was one, the restoration of the American economy, which created 19 million new jobs. But secondly, was the restoration of America's morale, which he knew he had to have the restoration of the American morale. We'd suffered through malaise, Jimmy Carter's malaise. We'd suffered through Watergate. We'd suffered through gas lines. We'd suffered through the loss of Vietnam. We'd suffered through Nixon's resignation, JFK's assassination, Martin Luther King's assassination. From 1963 to 1980, it had been a pretty lousy 17 years for the American psyche. But he believed that America operated on a higher moral plane than any other country in history. And he assumed the presidency in that fashion. And he knew that to defeat the Soviet, he had to have a strong economy. And to have a strong economy, he had to raise America's morale.
A lot of parallels have been made, Craig, between where we stand right now as a country and where we stood in 1980. How accurate do you think those parallels are, and what's the right response?
I think there are some parallels. I think that in some ways we were worse off in 1980. We were losing a Cold War, which had, dire and permanent consequences for all of us, for our children, for our way of life. And the economy was spiraling out of control with high interest rates and high inflation, which high inflation has destroyed countries before. The Weimar Republic was destroyed by high inflation. So, we've now gone, something like 30-some-odd years without having an inflationary problem in our monetary system. But there was a time where people really thought, you know, the American Republic was nearing the end of its life because of the debilitating effect of inflation on money.
Craig, last question. You've obviously spent a lot of time in recent years making sure that people understand what the true Reagan legacy is, from the 76 campaign to the 1980 campaign and beyond, and now with this book called Last Act. History right now is largely in the hands of academia and to some extent the press, which obviously lean to the left. So what are you doing? What do you hope is done in general to make sure that generations from now history accurately records the Reagan years?
Well, I push back a lot. is I can do what I can do, which is to write the history accurately, which is to record my thoughts, which is to give lectures, to write op-eds, and to push back on disinformation. And there's fortunately there's a group of Reagan historians and biographers who have demonstrated a willingness and ability, and sometimes even courage, to push back against disinformation about Ronald Reagan. And you know, Ronald Reagan's legacy is too important. You know, George Santayana once said that history is a pack of lies written by people who weren't there. And the history of Ronald Reagan is too important to be lied about or written by people who weren't there.
It's a fascinating book, and if you want to be impressed by just how much research Craig did, he has basically every reaction following Ronald Reagan's death that you could possibly imagine, footnote after footnote after footnote, just really adding flavor and insight into how the nation was at the time and how it responded to the death of President Reagan, both in terms of those who didn't like him and the millions upon millions of Americans who mourn him greatly at that time. So, Craig, congratulations on the book, and thanks for being with us today.
You bet, Greg. Thank you very much.
Craig Shirley is the author of Last Act, The Final Years and Emerging Legacy of Ronald Reagan. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.